don't know what to say, the monkeys won't do. And I also don't know what to say about those crazy producers from the Geek Cock Radio Network. They're driving me crazy.
Hello and welcome to Tooncast, episode 93. Before Steve Megatron and I, TFG, and Mike get into the Batman the Animated Series coverage here on Tooncast, I brought in a buddy of mine, Nightwing, from the Earth2.net forums. That's earth-2.net. You can go over there and be a member of their forums. Nightwing is, like me, one of those believers that Teen Titans does not exist within the DCAU, DC Animated Universe continuity.
Yep.
There have been plenty of arguments why it's in, why it isn't in, and it just, to me, the show, first of all, Teen Titans is a completely different crew than any of the other DC Anime Universe shows. It has a completely different style. It's more anime than animation. It doesn't fit. Take it away, Nightwing. Make your argument. Or state your opinion, I should say. Oh, boy. Did we lose him? Aaron, wake up. Crap. Steve, this is an edit point.
Okay, here we go.
Go ahead.
I have microphone problems. Okay, where do I start? So, yeah. Every other show in the entire DCAU has very clear-cut crossovers. They have characters traversing between one show to the next. You had Batman on Superman, the animated series. Then you had Justice League, where they continued the exact same storylines. They had Brainiac come back. They had the Joker come back. They had all the same characters and the exact same character relationships and storylines continue on. The Zeta Project was a spinoff of Batman Beyond. You know, it originated there. There's very, very clear-cut crossovers and everything, but Teen Titans, great show. I love it. I've seen almost every episode. I think it's a wonderful animated series, totally worthy of your time. Awesome, awesome, totally unique blend of American and Asian style animation, but overall, yeah, it is not in the same animated universe. There's a few hints here and there that they kind of joke, oh yeah, it could be in the same continuity, but there's nothing serious. There's no reason to think that it is in continuity, and it only makes things worse if you actually put it in there, because it mucks up the entire timeline. It doesn't add any resonance to the characters. It actually contradicts so many things that it makes things more complicated. So, honestly, yeah, in my opinion, no, it can't be in continuity. It's great, I love it, but it's not in the exact same universe.
Yeah, and Bruce Timm even said if Teen Titans was ever to be considered in storyline continuity, it would have to have happened before Batman the Animated Series. And that, to me, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to a certain extent just because Robin is younger in Teen Titans than he is in BTAS.
But the reason why it doesn't make sense to me is that because Robin is a young Robin in Teen Titans, where in BTAS, even when he first appears, I forget which episode it is that he first appears in, but whenever he first appears with Batman, he's not a kid. He's a teenager.
Right. Well, he is in his freshman or sophomore year of college in BTAS.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Teen Titans would have to exist before that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, then you've got Robin making out with alien Starfire and, you know, traveling the universe before Superman ever shows up. And it's like, what? And then he forgets how to use Kung Fu. And he doesn't have all, like, quantum technology in his cape. He actually has that in the show. Like, his cape is made of, like, some sort of, fabric titanium. And yet, you know, it's not later. It's like, wait, how did that work?
Yeah, it's just, it's too weird for me to allow it to be in continuity. And, you know, I've scoured the internet everywhere I can find. It is not ever mentioned being within the DC Animated Universe continuity. It is said that it possibly could be, but not really. Anytime you look up DC Animated Universe, it never appears in anything as far as, you know, research materials. Steve, what do you think?
Honestly, I think like you guys were saying, there's a lot of inconsistencies, so that leads me to believe that they're not the same continuity. Not only that, but I don't see Robin having ever been in the Titans area. I could have seen if the younger Robin, Tim Drake, had been in it.
Yeah.
I could have understood that, but Dick Grayson, not really. I don't see it coinciding because, for another reason, you never see those characters again in the DCAU.
Well, the thing is, in our Tooncast superfan, Kevin Cooper, in the chat there, Cell Therapy, he says that he thinks that the T.T. Robin was Tim Drake. No, in Teen Titans, it specifically states that Robin is Dick Grayson.
And see, there's the other problem with it is they have him as a younger version of Nightwing in one of the episodes. It's kind of a
future Nightwing, yeah.
Yes, but it still ties in with the whole Teen Titans timeline.
Right, yeah. And Nightwing is spelled with an N, not a K.
I changed it for my own purposes. I am not Dick Grayson. I'm a different character, just with one letter.
Oh, my God. We're starting a whole bunch of other things here. So, all right. Yes. I would like to thank Nightwing, a.k.a. Aaron, for stopping by. He will return with me on Superman the Animated Series, which will be recorded tomorrow night, actually, Friday the 18th of February. I almost said June. Why the hell am I fast-forwarding 4 months? Yes, so that's it for this segment. And to quote the Raven,
Teen Titans is not in continuity.
Hello and welcome to the 93rd episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm your host, Steve Joe and Mike, and that over there returning is Steve Megatron.
Why is it that over there? Anyways, hello.
Because I'm Mike, and you are?
Steve Megatron.
Exactly. Now, for those people who may, that one person that may have thought that I was Steve. What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's just a completely different tone of voice.
Yeah, exactly. Completely
Especially
different accent,
the
completely different everything.
Yes.
Oh, good Lord. Just, all right. So, we are here, and we are starting the DC Animated Universe Spotlight that will end Tooncast proper. I know everyone is very sad about Tooncast ending, but trust me, it will live on 65 years in the future.
Most of us will be dead then.
Yeah, probably true. Well, let's see. 2011 plus 65.
I'll be dead.
6 minus 1980. Oh, wait. That's the wrong thing.
You're supposed to add how old you are now plus 65.
I'd be 96. I'd still be alive, and I'd still be podcasting at 96, most likely. But anyway, 90. Anyway, we are here to start with Batman, the animated series.
Yay.
Yes, and since our professor isn't here because, well, he's out of his mind at this moment.
Yeah,
he's out of his mind at this moment.
He's frozen in carbonate.
He's frozen in carbonite. I wonder if he has a slave Leia coming after him. Anyway, yes, so getting into the history lesson here. Batman the Animated Series, often shortened as BTAS, is an American animated series adaptation of the comic book series starring the DC Comics superhero Batman. The series is noted for being the first to take place in the DC animated universe. It was produced by Warner Brothers Animation. The visual style of the series is based on the artwork of producer Bruce Timm. The original series aired on Fox from September 5th, 1992 to September 15th, 1995. When the first season of the series aired on weekday afternoons, it lacked an on-screen title, was officially titled Batman. When its time slot was moved to weekends on some Fox channels for the second season, it was renamed The Adventures of Batman and Robin. And there have also been other titles that we will talk about down the line as well. So, Steve, what are your general memories of Batman the Animated Series?
Quite honestly, I would have to say this is the best Batman series that I've ever seen. Just the overall style of the animation, the voice acting, everything is superb, and it definitely embodies the entire vibe of Batman, unlike some of the newer incarnations that are out there. I mean, to each their own, but I would have to say this is most definitely one of the best animated series of all time, and especially for Batman.
Yes, exactly. Now, were you able to watch this as a kid?
I watched this every day. I had just about every figure. Funny thing is, the Batman figure was Batman was always my favorite in this, and my villains changed quite frequently because I had such a huge gallery to choose from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked all of the villains, and I loved Batman. I love the interaction between Batman and Robin and just everybody around Batman, but I also liked Batman doing his solo thing. Unfortunately, in 1994, I did something. My stepmother decided to punish me and told me that I could never watch Batman animated series as long as I lived in her household. She said it was too violent.
Wow. But nobody dies.
I wonder if she's actually seen cartoons today like South Park.
Somebody dies every episode in that. I mean, at least in Batman, you knew nobody was really going to die, even if the Joker fell from a, 30-story building.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, eventually I came back to Batman, obviously, after I left my stepmom's house and all that stuff, and I love this cartoon. This cartoon's amazing. It does so many things on so many levels. It's just so, so awesome. So getting into the characters and voice actors and all of that stuff, there is a lot of stuff to go through here. I'm going to try to keep it short and sweet. Did you know that we hear Batman before we actually ever see Batman?
Trying to think. I didn't know that.
If you go back and you watch On Leather Wings, as the Man-Bat flies up across the front of the helicopter, the helicopter pilot says, "Hey, did you see that, or what was that?" That's Kevin Conroy's voice before he was ever in the bat suit.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yep. Let's see. As far as the characters, new villains such as Red Claw, Kodai Ken, Tigress, and the Sewer King were invented for the series, but to little acclaim. On the other hand, Joker's accomplice Harley Quinn, Gotham City Police Detective Renee Montoya, and sociopathic vigilante Lockup grew much popularity in which they became characters in the comics. Aside from creating characters that crossed over into the mainline DC Comics, several of the series' reinterpretations were carried over as well. Mr. Freeze revised to emulate the series' tragic story, the success of which actually compelled DC to bring the character back after killing him off some years earlier. Just overall, like, just going down the character list, I'm just going to name off the characters. I'm not really going to read anything about the characters, but you got Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson, obviously, Batman and Robin. And then you've got Alfred Pennyworth, Commissioner James Gordon, Detective Harvey Bullock, Dick Grayson, as I said, who's also Robin and Nightwing, Barbara Gordon / Batgirl, Officer Renee Montoya, Lucius Fox, Summer Gleason, Dr. Leslie Tompkins, Mayor Hamilton Hill, Veronica Vreeland, Carl Rossum, Jonah Hex, Zatanna, Simon Trent / the Grey Ghosts, or the Grey Ghost, I should say, not Grey Ghosts. One thing very interesting to note, and I never knew this, because I don't think I had seen, I think it's the first 9, maybe 10 episodes of the series, Alfred Pennyworth was voiced by Clive Revell before Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. had took over and made Alfred what he is today as far as that voice goes. I don't like the Clive Revell version of Alfred at all.
I also have to agree with you.
It just doesn't...
It just doesn't sit right with you when you listen to the voice.
Yeah, it doesn't fit at all. But who is your, out of the protagonists here, who is your favorite character?
Well, obviously Batman. hands down.
I like Batman. I really do. But I also like Robin and Batgirl and just the dynamic that the Bat family has in this. I really, really like that out of the heroes. And I also like the dynamic between Batman and Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, I'd definitely say I did like Commissioner Gordon, especially his initial interpretation or style, I should say.
Yeah.
Animation style.
We should also mention that Bob Hastings voiced Commissioner Gordon, Robert Costanzo voiced Harvey Bullock, Lauren Lester voiced Dick Grayson / Robin, and Melissa Gilbert had voiced Barbara Gordon, Batgirl. The other voice actors include Ingrid Olu, I think is how it's said, Leanne Schreimer, who played Montoya, Brock Peters, Mari Devon, Diana Muldaur. Yeah, some of these are weird names. Mary Lou Henner was Veronica Vreeland. That's awesome. William Sanderson was Carl Rossum. William McKinney was Jonah Hex. Julie Brown was Zatanna. And, of course, Adam West was the Grey Ghost.
Yeah, that definitely was one of my favorite characters to be injected into the Batman line.
Yeah, so much. Cell Therapy is saying in the chat, because we are Ustreaming this episode of Tooncast, that he had liked Robin. He added a bit of humor, but he still had that dark edge, and I will so agree with that.
And this interpretation of Robin was probably one of the better ones, too, in recent years.
Yeah.
Just because the voice and his whole dynamic, it just seemed to fit with the character. It wasn't the... you know, holy bat flaps, you know, from the 60s, but it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't too much.
Exactly. And getting into the antagonists, the rogues gallery, you have, I'm going to go through the characters first, and then I'll go back and through the, I'll go back through the voice actors. You've got the Joker, the Penguin, Catwoman, the Riddler, Mr. Freeze, Two-Face, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, the Scarecrow, Killer Croc. I almost got him. I hit him with a rock. The Mad Hatter, Clayface, Man-Bat, the Ventriloquist, Ra's al Ghul is how you say it, and Bane. Just, wow. And the thing about Batman the Animated Series, I know we're talking about the characters, but the thing about the series is they have said, both Eric Radomski and Bruce Timm had said when they first started the series, they approached it like mini movies. And it so felt like a movie every episode.
Because no matter what you did, it was highly interesting.
Yep. The voice actors are as follows, obviously going down the same line. Mark Hamill, Paul Williams, Adrienne Barbeau, John Glover. John Glover was the Riddler, for Christ's sake. That's amazing. John Glover has gotten to play two of the – well, not really the – well, all right. He got to play two of the best villains in DC Universe. He got to play Riddler in this, and he got to play Lex Luthor's father in Smallville, which is very awesome. Michael and Sarah as Mr. Freeze, Richard Mall as Two-Face, which is very an interesting choice. Diane Pershing as Poison Ivy, Arlene Sorkin as Harley Quinn, Henry Pollack II as Scarecrow, Aaron Kincaid as the Killer Croc, Roddy McDowall as the Mad Hatter, that was awesome. Ron Perlman as Clayface. Ron Perlman rocks the DC Animated Universe. Mark Singer as the Man-Bat. George DeSunsda, or I can't, I'm sorry if I mispronounce his name, I can't, as the Ventriloquist. David Warner as Ra's al Ghul. Supposedly Warner is rumored to be Shockwave in Transformers Dark of the Moon, but anyway. And Henry Silva as Bane. Who is your, which this won't surprise me, but I don't think it'll surprise anybody else either, but who is your favorite villain from the DCA, or not the DC, from BTAS?
Now, see, I have a hard time choosing just one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many good ones right in this list. Although some of these are definitely weaker than others.
Right.
I would have to say my number one is the Joker, mm-hmm. just because of his total interaction with Batman throughout the DCAU and how
right.
much torment he has caused and how deep he has stuck the knife in Batman.
Yes.
Time after time. And I would have to say a tie for second place for me would be Ra's al Ghul and mm-hmm. the Riddler. And probably Mr. Freeze, which is kind of a cop-out, because I would say Mr. Freeze has the best voice actor
yeah.
for that role ever, although I'm quite interested to see Maurice LaMarche in the new Batman game, but that's besides the fact. The Riddler used to be my favorite villain in the Batman series. I have no idea why, because I never owned the original Joker toy back in the day. I had... the Riddler, and I never did have a Ra's toy, but I always liked the character in the episodes just because it was just some way that he played into the whole dynamic.
Yeah, the Riddler in this cartoon was, it was, because before this we had only had, before BTAS we had only had the Frank Gershon Batman 66 Riddler. And that Riddler was kind of... He was borderline nuts because he always had a crazy laugh like the Joker did.
Yeah.
And this one... Go ahead.
I was going to say, he was more borderline Joker with, you know, instead of, you know, the whoopee cushion jokes, he just had riddles.
Right, yeah. Whereas this one, portrayed by John Glover, was just, you know, conniving and cunning and always there to outsmart Batman.
Which, that's how they also, he's kind of gotten a rap for that now, where they continuously use that in all of his current iterations.
Right, yeah.
Which I definitely think adds to the role. I mean, despite the fact he wasn't in... the DCAU very much.
Right.
I still think he left a lasting mark on the series.
Oh, yeah. So much so. Some of the supporting antagonists are Ed Asner as Roland Daggett, Jeff Bennett as Hardak, Hart Bruckner as Arthur Reeves, George DeSunsda again as Gregory Belson, Robert Ito as Kyodai Ken, Allison LaPeca as Mary Doll, slash Baby Doll. Joseph Mayer as Dr. Emil Doran. Dick Miller as Chucky Saul. Kate Mulgrew as Red Claw. George Murdoch as Boss Bigus, Michael Pataki as Sewer King, Alan Rations as Temple Fugate / the Clock King. Clock King rules.
Yes.
Mark Ralston as the Firefly, John P. Ryan as Buzz Bronski, Helen Slater as Talia Al. Oh my God, what? I did not know that was her. Holy crap. You got Supergirl to play Talia Al Ghul? Oh my God. Wow. That's amazing. John Vernon as Rupert Thorne. Abe Vigoda as Salvatore Sal Valestra. Bruce Weitz as Lockup. Treat Williams as Professor Milo. And Michael York as Count Vertigo. You have any characters that you really didn't like out of the heroes or the villains?
People that I didn't like, I would have to say something about the Man-Bat drove me nuts. I just couldn't stand the role.
Yeah.
Out of the main antagonists. Out of the supporting ones, pretty much the only characters I like out of the supporting antagonists are Hardak, and Talia al Ghul and the Clock King. The rest of them, I could just... I don't even care. They didn't leave that much of a lasting impression on me that they were that important.
Yeah. I think, like, a lot of, like, the non-main antagonists aren't important, but I also think that they filled in nicely. Because let's face it, I mean, there really is... Like, Batman the Animated Series stands on its own. The actual continuity, the actual starting of continuity for the DC Animated Universe actually comes in Superman the Animated Series. These are standalone mini-movies. And there really is no continuity to them, but honestly, there's probably only 10 episodes out of the 109 or 108 or however many there are. There's like 10 episodes that I really could care less for. It's just one of those things. I like them all because they are individual. And that's very different for me to say, especially on Tooncast and especially on one of our podcasts, because I have always said I prefer continuity to not continuity type of shows. But this, it makes sense because at the time when it was originally on and it was running once a week on Saturdays, it was like a Saturday matinee mini movie. It really was. And I didn't need a continuity to it. You know what
I mean? Oh, yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? So, yes. Getting into the behind the scenes, some stuff for behind the scenes as far as some development. The original series was partially inspired by the Frank Miller comic Batman the Dark Knight Returns, the Tim Burton films Batman and Batman Returns, and the acclaimed Superman cartoons produced by the Fleischer Studios in the 1940s. Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski designed the series by closely emulating the Tim Burton films' otherworldly timelessness, incorporating period features such as black and white title cards, police blimps, even though no such thing has existed. Tim has stated that he found it to fit the period they were going for. 40s influenced look and a vintage color scheme in largely film noir influenced style. The series initially took a variation from music written by Danny Elfman for the Burton films Batman and Batman Returns as its theme. Later episodes of the series used a new theme with a similar style by Shirley Walker, who was occasionally Elfman's conductor on the films that they had worked on. The score of the series was influenced by Elfman and Walker's work on Batman and Batman Returns and the music of the 40s film noir. The other major element inspired by the 1989 film is the series' interpretation of the Joker character as halfway between psychotic killer and the prankster clown versions of the comic book character. His real name in the series, like the film, is given several times as Jack Napier, although it is later suggested that it is simply his primary alias. I gotta say, I'm so not a Batman comic aficionado. There's so much Batman continuity over the, you know, since 1939, I wouldn't know where to start. But I know for a fact that the Joker, the true apparition of the Joker, he should never have a name. Don't give the guy a name. And I know they had to do that in the 1989 Batman film because, you know, no one would get it. Especially, you know, coming out of the 80s, I don't think anybody would have gotten it, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing with that is, I think that, I mean, because in movies they have to explain everything, otherwise people that are new to the franchise don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yep.
But I like how, and they went back to this in The Dark Knight, where they had the Joker kind of just making up his own random, you know, version of what he says happened.
Right.
Or what he says his name is, even though it just leads you to believe that he's just fucking crazy. And, you know, just, you don't know any different.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, Batman in the animated series actually says later on, I believe it's in season 4, with the Mad Love episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, because Harley says one version of the story, and Batman says, oh, he told you that, he told me, blah, 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 blah. And, she's,
yeah.
And then she starts wigging out, and, you know, he says he's got a million of them.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just, it adds to that dynamic that you just, you don't even know anything really about this character other than he's just crazy.
Well, yeah. Yep. I totally agree. Let's see here. This is pretty interesting. Robin's Reckoning won an Emmy in 1993 for Most Outstanding Half Hour or Less Program. Heart of Ice also won the show an Emmy in 1993, but instead for Most Outstanding Writing in an Animated Program. Heart of Ice is easily one of... It's not the best, in my opinion, it's not the best episode, but Heart of Ice, the Mr. Freeze story, and the way they flushed out the Mr. Freeze character, that was a totally awesome episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because they make him sympathetic instead of just, I'm going to freeze you because I have cold puns, and yeah, let's not go there. Let's not flash to 1995, please.
No.
Or, no, not 95, 97. That's what it is. 97 is when that stupid movie came out. Let's see here. You want to take some of the adaptations down there?
Alrighty then.
We're talking about?
Oh, there we go. The adaptations. Okay. The Cape and Cowl Conspiracy was an adaptation of the Cape and Cowl Death Trap from the Detective Comics, issue number 140 of August 1975. The Strange Secret of Bruce Wayne has been based on the comic stories The Dead Yet Alive and I Am the Batman from the Detective Comics, number 471 and 472, also from 1977. Dreams in Darkness takes its cues from a graphic novel titled The Last Arkham. Moon of the Wolf is based on the comic story of the same name by writer Len Wein from the Batman number 255 in 1974.
Moon of the Wolf is easily one of the worst episodes of this series.
I hated that episode.
Yeah.
I still can't watch it.
Nah, no.
If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich? Is a loose adaptation of The Riddler from Detective Comics number 140, and that was a most excellent episode.
Yeah, it was.
Especially a great introduction to the Riddler.
Yeah.
Off Balance is a direct adaptation of Batman Into the Den of the Death Dealers from Detective Comics number 411 in 1971. And it makes the first appearance of Talia al Ghul.
That's interesting. Considering the also of a direct adaptation is the two-parter episode, The Demon's Quest, based on the Daughter of the Demon from the Batman from Batman number 232, June 71, and The Demon Lives Again, Batman number 244, September 72, also by Dennis O'Neill and Neil Adams, famous for introducing one of Batman's deadlier foes, Ra's al Ghul, father of Talia. The episode... Oh, are you going to take the Joker one?
Yes. The episode The Laughing Fish was based on three Batman comics blended together. The Joker's Five-Way Revenge from Batman number 251 in 1973, followed by The Laughing Fish and Sign of the Joker from Detective Comics number 475 and 476 from 1978. During a Spotlight podcast from Comic-Con 2007, Paul Dini explained that the reason why the episode combined those stories was because the show's creators could not adapt them separately because their content and thematic elements would not have been cleared by the censors.
Yeah, they got away with a lot of stuff in the DCAU in general, but there is a lot of stuff that they couldn't have gotten away with. There's just no way. And none of the stuff that they did in the DCAU back then would have been able to get away with nowadays. Part 1 of Robin's Reckoning takes its cues from Detective Comics number 38 of June 1940. A Bullet for Bullock is based on the comic of the same name from Detective Comics number 651 of October of 1992 by Chuck Dixon. Joker's Millions from the New Batman Adventures is based on Detective Comics number 180 in February 1952. The feature film Mask of the Phantasm is also an adaptation. The film's flashbacks were inspired by Batman Year One, whereas the character of Andrea Beaumont and the Phantasm were inspired by Batman Year Two. That's pretty interesting, actually.
Yes.
Getting into kind of jumping off the trivia here. Actually, no, the one last trivia bit, and then we're going to jump off of this. The episode Almost Got Him, where Two-Face's strategy, strapping down Batman to a giant coin and flipping the coin in the air, was taken from the comics where both Batman and Robin were tied to a giant penny that was catapulted onto spikes. However, they were able to create a negative magnetic field to repel the spikes and enable themselves to land heads up, snap the ropes, and defeat Two-Face. I love the Almost Got Him episode.
That's... I used to have the little comic of it, as well as I liked the episode. It was just a funny, just guys sitting down playing poker, you know, complaining about, oh, I almost got Batman this one time. Just to be sitting with him.
Yeah. I threw a rock at him. We'll get to that in a little bit. Getting into some of the directors, writers, producers type of thing. Normally in most of this, we kind of list people off and kind of recognize people. All of the DCAU people, for the most part, the majority of them, I know. I don't know them personally, obviously, but like I know of them, so... There's probably not a lot on this list that I won't recognize, obviously, from watching the series. Kevin Altieri was one of the main directors. Boyd Kirkland, rest in peace, Boyd. He just actually passed away a couple of weeks ago. He was a director for Batman the Animated Series for about 21 episodes. Frank Power, I think is how it's said. Dan Reba. Dick Sebast, Bruce Timm, and Eric Radomski, Paul Dini, Michael Reeves, Randy Rogel, Steve Perry, Alan Burnett, Denny O'Neill. These are all writers. Len Wein, Tom Ruger. Yay, Tom Ruger, Animaniacs. you recognize the next two names, don't you? We talked to one of them. We haven't talked to the other one yet. Marty Eisenberg and Robert N. Skeer. Yes, we actually interviewed Robert N. Skeer, mostly for Beast Machines, but head on over to geekcastradio.com and check out our interview, our featured guest page, and you can find that interview with Robert N. Skeer. It was a very, very interesting interview.
Funny thing is, there's a lot of memorable names in the writing credits.
Oh, yeah.
His just being one of them, Eisenberg, the Reeves Stevens, they've written many books. You've got Bob Kane in there, David Wise, Alan Burnett, Marv Wolfman. I mean, there's just a ton of great writers in the show, which have created the possibly the best animated series of all time.
Exactly. And that's the thing. You know, because there was such great writing on the show, it didn't matter if it was a master villain or if it was a, you know, a side character villain, because the writing was so good. And as I've said throughout this episode, and I will continue to say, these are mini movies. Each episode had its own feel. No episode felt like it was like any other episode. They were all individual, and it was just awesome, amazing, great. Just everything about it was awesome. Okay, so I love this. This is going to be quick. The actual show, getting into the actual show, each episode focused on an individual plot, most with Batman, Rogue Gallery in each one, and the creators have said that they thought the episodes were like mini movies, like I've said. And yes, I totally meant to read that as monotone as I could, because when I was looking for an overall plot of Batman the Animated Series, I couldn't find one. Which I'm so glad of, because why don't you name off some of your favorite episodes, Steve?
Good Lord, there's a lot.
Well, don't name all 109, but name like...
No, I have a list of 10.
But... Oh, okay, your top 10, there you go.
Okay. I would have to say The Last Laugh with the Joker,
mm-hmm.
Heart of Ice, The Clock King, His Silicon Soul, where you have the Hardack Batman.
Yeah.
Who thinks he killed himself.
Yeah.
It's a conscious issue. What is Reality, which was, I believe, written by Bob Skeer.
Yeah.
And it's got the Riddler. Almost Got Him, Joker's Millions, which I thought was hilarious. He gets duped by a crime lord.
Yeah.
Mad Love, Beware the Creeper. Mostly because the Joker's basically recreating himself, but it failed miserably. Cold Comfort, because you could see Mr. Freeze's new look with his spider legs, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's creepy.
It's creepy, but it's funny. Not really funny in the right sense, but I mean, it's just funny because he's ahead. Like Futurama. Then you've got the Great Ghost episodes, because there's not one, there's two.
Yep.
And I just loved any time that Adam West got to get on the episodes.
Yeah, that was very awesome. For me, if I was going to do a top 10, Last Laugh is up there. Christmas, I like Christmas with the Joker, just because it's a Joker episode. What was the other one? I loved the Two-Face two-parter. That was very, very compelling. I loved the Clayface episodes. If I was going to pick like an overall, like a number one or number two favorite episode, it would have, just for me personally, it would have to be Almost Got Him. And actually, it'd be a tie between three episodes. Almost Got Him, Over the Edge, and Old Wounds. Over the Edge was the one where Scarecrow knocks out Batgirl, and she has this dream of what would happen if Commissioner Gordon ever found out what, you know, who Barbara was, what she did, and who, if he found out, you know, who. I mean, Commissioner Gordon kind of knows, you know, and always has given Batman a kind of a free rein, but I mean, really, what would happen if Batgirl, his daughter, Barbara Gordon, died on Batman's watch. And that was what that whole episode was about. And I just absolutely loved him. Loved that episode because it was such a compelling story. It was a nice way to, you know, it folded out nicely. Almost Got Him, we've kind of talked about. It's basically criminals sitting around a table, card table, telling stories of how they almost got Batman. And then Old Wounds was the story of how, because at that point you had Tim Drake as Robin, because Dick Grayson had left to become Nightwing. Old Wounds was the story of how it came that Robin left, that Dick Grayson had left. And I really, really liked that episode.
Yeah, that was a pretty good episode.
Yes, it was. So, I've decided to let you guys hear some of the alternate themes. You're going to hear the Batman and the Adventures of Batman and Robin theme, and you're also going to hear the new Batman Superman Adventures theme before we head into the music segment. We'll be back after this. And now we are on to the music segment. The series' original music was done by Shirley Walker, Lolita Romanus, Michael McQuiston, Stuart Balcombe, Richard Bronskill, Carl Johnson, and Christopher Carter. What did you think of the music when you first saw the show? The very first episode you watched, what did you think of the music, Steve?
I really liked the music. It's just, it's catchy, it's memorable, you know what it is when you're listening to it, partially because it's familiar for those that watch the 89 Batman film.
Right.
Being that's what it's based off of, but every cue in the show fits really well with everything that's going on.
Exactly, yeah.
And there's no other, sound that you could put in there, even for when it gets goofier and the season 4, when they go to the, Batman-Superman adventures. Even then, the audio and the music sound perfect.
Yeah, it does. It does. I absolutely love the music from this cartoon. Every single cue is just amazing. And, let me see if, December 16th of 2008, I almost said 20-08. Oh my god, that's horrible. I hate that. December 16th, 2008, La La Land Records had released the two-disc limited edition soundtrack. The musical score was written by several different composers throughout the course of the series. The main theme of the show, which was heard during the opening and ending credits of each episode, was composed by Danny Elfman. At first, Elfman turned down the Bruce Timm offer to compose the theme for the show, and so Timm hired Shirley Walker to do so. Though as time went by, Elfman changed his mind and composed a variation of his 1989 Batman movie theme. Walker's unused theme went on to become the main theme for the second season of the show, when the name was changed to The Adventures of Batman and Robin. In 1996, Walker won her first Daytime Emmy Award for her music direction for The Adventures of Batman and Robin. She would then go on to win another Daytime Emmy Award in the category of Music Composition for Batman Beyond in 2001. Although at least several different composers worked on the series, Walker, Lolita Romanus, and Michael McQuiston are regarded as the main contributors. After the series finished up in 1995, the three went on to score the new Batman Adventures in 1997 and Batman Beyond in 1999. Television composer Christopher Carter scored alongside Walker, Romanus, and McQuiston throughout many DC Anime Universe shows that later filled in for Walker after her death in 2006. The soundtrack from La La Land Records, it's a two-disc soundtrack. Like I said, it was a very limited edition. I was able to get it. It basically has, Gotham City Overture, which is a 14-minute, just all different themes from the series and within a 14-minute time span. Obviously, you have Batman the Animated Series, the main title, the Danny Elfman stuff. And then it has tracks from On Leather Wings, The Last Laugh, It's Never Too Late, Pretty Poison, Christmas with the Joker. And then it has the alternate main title, which you heard earlier in this episode of Tooncast, which is the one that Shirley Walker had used at the second season point. And then it's got Two-Face, Parts 1 and 2, Joker's Favor, Vendetta, Perchance to Dream, Birds of a Feather, and then it's got the end credit theme as well. I absolutely love this soundtrack. This soundtrack I love hearing the music with the show, but just hearing the music itself, it's so awesome.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it in my mind either.
Mm-hmm. As I said before, La La Land Records had released Batman the Animated Series onto a two-disc CD set. The release was limited to a pressing of 3,000 copies. So if you didn't get this back in 2008, you're going to be paying hefty, hefty eBay prices now.
You're kicking yourself in the pants.
Yep. Of course, if you want to email tfgmike@gmail.com, maybe I could hook you up. Maybe. I don't know. The 3,000 copies sold very quickly. About 1 month after its release, the soundtrack set had sold over 2,500 copies. According to a spokesperson of La La Land Records, the sold-out status of the soundtrack can only help as the label hopes to convince Warner Brothers to release more Batman the Animated Series soundtracks. Upon its release, the soundtrack received outstanding reviews and is now completely sold out, as I said. As far as soundtracks, I believe La La Land Records has released other DC soundtracks. They've done like soundtracks for the new DC Universe original animated movies. But they also did the soundtrack for Mask of the Phantasm, which, again, it's just amazing to hear that music without the sound effects. I'm so hoping that La La Land Records will eventually get to release Superman the Animated Series, Batman Beyond, and Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. The Batman Beyond stuff we'll talk about in the Batman Beyond episode. Those do have soundtracks, which are very good, but they're not La La Land. They're made by somebody else, which we'll talk about when we get to episode 95 of Tooncast, so in about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks. You have any final thoughts on the music, Steve?
No, I think I'm good.
You sure?
Yeah.
You want to read the IGN rating there?
In January 2009, IGN ranked Batman the Animated Series at number 2 on their top 100 animated TV shows list. Which, I don't know if I'd give it number 2, just for the sake of that there's cartoons such as, like, I don't know, that have lasted the test of time, such as you know, Looney Tunes and other shows like that, but I would definitely say that it would be within my top five.
Yeah, if I was just ranking this amongst other superhero cartoons,
it would be number one, but...
It would be number one. It would so be number one, but if we're going to rank the top 100 animated series of all time, see what I did
Project.
There? Yes, shameless plug. Coming March 7th, 2011. Anyway, it's a very awesome series, and it did so well, and it was so different. I don't know if any animated series since then has done this, but I knew for a fact even before we get a call from Will Smith on the voicemail line that you'll hear a little bit later. That's an inside joke that only one of the Ustream viewers will catch. Even before he told us about that they had used the black paper to draw on for the series, I had already known that. And it was just so – it was such a different way to approach the series, and it was just so awesome. It premiered on the Fox Network's children's block Fox Kids on September 5th, 1992, and aired in that block for the first several episodes of the series during the weekday afternoons. It then moved to Saturday morning television for Batman the Animated Series. It actually began re-airing in 2007 on Toon Disney's Jetix lineup along with Superman the Animated Series. Despite Warner Brothers being one of Disney's biggest competitors, both shows then continued to air on Toon Disney's successor, Disney XD, which began on February 13th, 2009. The show airs on Teletoon Retro, a Canadian broadcasting channel, debuting on January 8th, 2010. The first 65 episodes are confirmed, with the first being The Cat in the Claw. The show is scheduled to air on a weekly basis, airing at 7 a.m., 6 p.m., and midnight. All times are Eastern. That's right. You want to take with the reception there?
Batman the Animated Series has been met with almost universal acclaim and has been highly praised for its sophistication, mature writing, artistic ambition, and faithfulness to its source material. In the 1992 year, and issue, Entertainment Weekly ranked the series as one of the top television series of the year. Writer Les Daniels described the show as coming as close as any artist's statement has to defining the look of Batman for the 1990s. Deidre Shepherd, a reviewer for Common Sense Media, who posted her review on Go.com, described the series as a fairly violent cartoon with an overly grim quality.
Yeah, well, most reviewers don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Well, especially, it's being posted on Go.com, so I'm not gonna, I don't know.
Does Go.com still even exist?
I've never even heard of it.
I don't know
how
either.
Important they are. Anything less than five letters for a website address, it's not worth remembering.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, in 2009, IGN.com named Batman the Animated Series the second best animated television series of all time. Wizard Magazine also ranked it number two of the greatest animated series of all time. In both cases, the show lost to The Simpsons. Somebody should be shot in the face. Another more mature Fox cartoon series, Crave Online, also ranked the show number two for top five best superhero cartoons behind the 1940s Fletcher Superman cartoons.
I'm sorry, I like the Fletcher Superman cartoons, but there is no way in hell that they are over Batman the Animated Series. No.
Those are crap compared to the DCAU.
Yes. In 1999, a new spin-off series, Batman Beyond, was released to further critical acclaim. Then in 2001, the Justice League animated series was released, building on the success of both Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series. Featured Batman as one of the founders of the League. In addition, several of the animators from Japanese animation studios Sunrise worked on the series. Their work on Batman the Animated Series would become a great influence on one of the later series, Big O and Cowboy Bebop episode, Pierre Le Feu. I have no idea. I don't do anime, so I don't know. Let's see. As far as it had an immense impact on comics, characters such as Renee Montoya and Harley Quinn were originally created for the animated series, but their popularity proved such that the characters were introduced into the DC Comics universe. The Lego minifigures of various Batman characters are more strongly based upon the designs from the Batman the Animated Series than any other form of Batman media. More precisely, they are the Joker, Two-Face, Poison Ivy, Mr. Freeze, and Harley Quinn's minifigures seem to have identical costumes and faces to those characters from the series. The dark atmosphere, mature themes, and even some of the voice cast from the series are heavily employed in Batman Arkham Asylum video game. Yay!
Yay!
Batman the Animated Series is on DVD. Now, I'm going to say right now, I know that a lot of people can't afford big DVD sets, and that's fine. If you want to get, like, if you want to just have the cartoons to watch them, seek out the volume sets. But if you want a complete anthology of everything BTAS with a 140-page booklet, bonus disc with only one additional bonus feature on it, but hey, it's still better than nothing. You should have, back in 2008, you should have gotten Batman the Complete Animated Series. This was a limited run. I don't know exactly what the numbers were for it, but it is now, at this point, it's on Amazon for like $199 new. I bought my copy at Best Buy in 2008 for $75. You want to share your eBay story?
Yes, for anyone trying to obtain the Batman the Animated Series complete animated series box set, do not, and I repeat, do not go on eBay. If you purchase this on eBay, you will most likely and most definitely get a bootleg copy. I know this because I purchased one for $100. And I got online and I started comparing it with Mike's, which mine had typos, words upside down, and missing letters, leading me to realize I just got duped. So I contacted and returned it and obtained the volume sets from Amazon, knowing that I was getting legit copies. If you do decide to buy the complete animated series, only get it through Amazon.com.
I just looked at it earlier before we started the recording, the podcast episode. It is on Amazon new for $199.99. It is on Amazon used for $192 and change. Yes, I know that's a hell of a lot of money, but you have to understand, there was only a certain number of these printed because it was a limited edition. If you have $200 and you want to go spend it on it, you will be very happy that you were able to do so. I don't recommend it, obviously, if you don't have the money, but if you're that type of person that can spend $200 on a broken Masterpiece Rodimus, you can surely spend $200 on a really awesome DVD series set.
Yes.
Poor Kevin, our super fan. There were some feature films brought out of Batman the Animated Series. There was Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which released in 1993 based on the animated series. The film started production. It's a direct-to-video release, but was changed to be a theatrical release the next end near the end of the production. And then you have Batman and Mr. Freeze Sub-Zero, which was a 1998 direct-to-video release, also based on the series, which was initially completed as a tie-in to 1997's Batman and Robin. But due to the poor reception of that movie, its release was delayed a year. Oh, thank God. I love Batman and Mr. Freeze Sub-Zero, but seriously, it was supposed to be a continuation of Batman and Robin. No. And then you have Batman Mystery of the Batwoman, which came out in 2003, is a direct-to-video animated film based on the follow-up animated series, The New Batman Adventures. I do not like this movie. This movie is nuts. It's just not that great. And again, this is something we'll be talking about in 1919. Episode 95 is what I meant to say. Batman Beyond Return of the Joker was a 2000 direct-to-video animated film released before Batman Mystery of the Batwoman, but acts as a sequel due to the order of events. The film is set in the continuity of the animated series Batman Beyond and crossovers, as far as that goes. Let's see, a couple other things here. We got some crossovers here. Superman the Animated Series crossovers. Before the New Batman Adventures started airing alongside Superman the Animated Series, a three-part story had the Joker and Lex Luthor team up against Batman and Superman. This was later released at home video as the Batman-Superman movie and adapted into a comic book. The commentary on the Batman-Superman movie stated that the feature was intended to kick off the new Batman episodes, thus taking place before the first episode of the new Batman Adventures. Following the Batman-related episodes were individual stories titled Nighttime and The Demon Reborn. You want to take the Static Shock stuff there?
I got lost.
Okay. All right. So, Steve, this is an edit point. The other crossover that we had was with Static Shock. In a parallel with their appearances in Justice League, Batman and some of his supporting cast and villains also appeared in 5 episodes of Static Shock. While these episodes were actually made during the same time as Justice League and were being produced in the subjective chronologically of the DCAU, three of these episodes fall during the new Batman Adventures era, while the two-parter episode, A League of Their Own, takes place during the Justice League years. World's Finest, the three-parter, is just... Oh, God, that is so amazing. Just seeing them interact with each other, the Batman and Superman, that World's Finest is just amazing. I love that three-parter. Yes, Kevin, no love for Mystery of the Batwoman. That movie sucked.
I have to second that.
Yeah, that movie really, really sucked. The story, mainly why I don't like Mystery of the Batwoman, the story really, really sucked. You want to take some of the merchandise, Steve?
Yes. The television series was accompanied by a tie-in comic book, The Batman Adventures, which followed the art style and continuity of the television series instead of other Batman comic books. The Batman Adventures, through several format changes to reflect the changing world of the series and its spin-offs, outlasted the series itself by nearly a decade, finally being canceled in 2004 to make way for the tie-in comic of a new unrelated Batman animated series, The Batman. There were also a short-lived series of tie-in novels adapted from episodes of the series. Some of them include Shadows of the Past, Duel to the Death, The Dragon and the Bat, and Mask of the Phantasm, three of which I actually owned.
Sweet.
Yes, they're still, I believe, at my mom's in her bookcase. But anyways, several video games, The Adventures of Batman and Robin, based on the animated continuity, were released during the 16-bit game machine era, somewhere between, I don't know, it was somewhere between 89 and 96, somewhere, is during that era.
Yeah.
Konami developed the game for the SNES, while Sega versions were released later. There were also various versions throughout all the different game systems. One later on was Batman Vengeance, which was released on the GameCube, PS2, and Xbox in 2001, which was based on the new Batman Adventures and reunited much of the cast Batman Rise of Sin
Zoo
was released for the Game Boy Advance, GameCube, PS2, Xbox, and PC, and used the style of the new Batman Adventures. Batman Chaos in Gotham was released for the Game Boy Color. It was also based on the same style. And though not directly related, Batman Arkham Asylum features many of the old cast talent from the show reprising their roles and makes some references to the cartoon as far as costume design and various other little tech elements and character portrayals.
Yes, and we also have coming up here soon, this year in 2011, we'll have Batman Arkham City, which is the sequel to Arkham Asylum.
Which looks so good, it's realistic looking.
Yes, very much realistic looking. So, I think we're going to take a break. You're going to hear some ads, but before the ads, you're going to hear some voicemails from some various people, and then we will come back, respond to the voicemails, and give our final thoughts on Batman the Animated Series.
Tooncast will be back after these messages!
Hey Tooncast, it's Tara, the rising star here, with my thoughts on Batman the Animated Series. Growing up, I used to watch Batman a lot, mostly on Saturday mornings. I loved the storylines, the animation style, and the great characters. I especially enjoyed watching the Joker's antics. Having an older brother definitely encouraged me to get into the Batman franchise. I have to say, I definitely do not regret watching this every Saturday morning. Batman to me is such an amazing series, and it's kind of sad that it's not available to watch on TV anymore. I hope it comes back one day, because it truly was one of the best animated franchises ever. It is kind of sad that kids today do not get to experience great cartoons like this one. Hopefully, one day, they'll be able to bring back these shows and put them back on air, so kids of the new millennium will get to experience what we all grew up with. That was just some of my thoughts on Batman the Animated Series, but don't worry, I'll be back with more voicemails to talk more about the DCAU Spotlight here on Tooncast. This is Tara the Rising Star, signing off.
Hello, Tooncast. This is Kevin C. calling in with a few thoughts on Batman the Animated Series. This is one of the few cartoons that I had to catch every episode of. You know, I had to catch every episode I could, and, you know, if I missed any, I was really mad. But, you know, just the opening alone is enough to capture any fan. You know, and there really aren't enough good things that I can say about this series. I love Bruce Timm's art style on the series. And, you know, when it comes to characters, I love it when an artist can do more with shape and volume than with lines and detail. So, for example, you can tell that Batman is muscular without actually drawing tons of muscles. His shape is what sells the design. And something else that was really amazing about the artwork is the fact that they drew on black paper, which really adds to the mood of the cartoon. See, when you draw on black paper, it kind of changes how you think about the composition, like what sort of stuff you want to leave in and what stuff to take out. So, you know, that was a great decision on their part to kind of flip it like that. And another thing I liked about the cartoon was the music. You know, they took it seriously, just the deep and beautiful compositions that fit every scene. I still remember the fight between Bruce Wayne and Kildaken. You know, that shit resonates, seriously. I mean, you know that a cartoon is epic when you can remember the scene and the music. The sound effects was memorable as well. You know, the unique sounds that the machine gun made are very unique, you know, and it's different, but it works somehow. And another point that I wanted to hit on was, you know, Batman the Animated Series really symbolizes a turning point in Western animation. A lot of people were saying that, you know, animation in the West, it's too kiddie, there's no real depth, and, you know, they were turning to anime to get their fix. And I had issues with friends of mine that were praising anime like it's the new hotness when there were awesome cartoons that they could watch right here. And I'm not putting anime down by any means, in any way, shape, or form. I love both styles. I just don't like it when people hate on shit without giving it a chance. But Batman the Animated Series uses art, music, and story to put it way above other cartoons. And there aren't many shows that can say that they're strong in all three of those areas. It's also one of the only comic to cartoon properties that made the original better. So I'm saying that Batman is better because of this cartoon. And Bruce Timm even gives a nod to Michael Keaton Batman for some of the darkness and the grit. So because of Batman the Anime Series, it's now okay to have mature themes and market towards an older audience. You know, this led to Superman, Justice League, and all of the DVD movies that now have a PG-13 rating. So I would say that Western animation and cartoons in general, owe a lot to Batman the Animated Series. Thanks, y'all, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, everyone. Glade, a.k.a. the Podcastinator, Podcastify, the plug-in air freshener, here for thoughts about BTAS. Oh man, where do I begin? The series that started it all, the DCAU, influenced my personality. I was 5 when it aired. It got me into comics. The music, the stories, all of it really. Totally legendary. Sure, there were a few duds, but what series, outside of Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, no seriously, go watch the series, doesn't have any. The voice acting, the art, man. What wasn't great about this series? Plus, we get the definitive Batman voice from Kevin Conroy and a creepy, yet somehow funny Joker from Mark Hamill. I don't think we'll get anything quite as groundbreaking as this series, perhaps ever again. Oh, be sure to check out my podcast, The Eighth Circle of Hell, at tsaproductions.podbe.com. So until the next DCAU series, Superman, I'll talk to you guys later.
Hi, this is Tim, leaving a voicemail message about the upcoming episode of Tooncast, episode 93 on Batman Animated Series. Man, what an incredible series that was. If you go back and watch the first episode of that series and compare it to the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons, you see exactly where the inspiration for that series came from. Animation is just incredible. The look of the show, the designs, you know, they still resonate with DC Animated today. But the great storytelling, the dark overtones of some of the stories, just the dark art that was used in the backgrounds, just all the colors. It's just an amazing show. It really is incredible. Very smart storytelling. Just so glad to have that amazing show.
Greetings from me on the new Tooncast once again. I'm the Vacuuminator, and I'm coming at you with a voicemail for the Batman the Animated Series episode. Now, I'm not that familiar with Batman the Animated Series. I caught, like, maybe 20-something episodes on Boomerang thing one night, right, because they were having a marathon. I'm more familiar with the DCAU from the Justice League cartoon, and I will be getting the box set of all the DVDs eventually. Eventually I will. But I digress. Batman the Animated Series is a complete masterpiece, and without it, we wouldn't have gotten some of the great cartoons that came after it, also by Bruce Timm and company, including the currently airing Young Justice cartoon, which I love to death. Now, there's not really all that much to say about Batman the Animated Series. In my opinion, it's just the comics, but brought to life, and I don't have to read, and I don't particularly like reading, so I love this show. But one thing I do want to comment on real quick, there were two episodes of the series featuring a character called baby doll who never appeared in the comics. And she was one of several characters who were invented during the show's airing. Baby doll is essentially Gary Coleman, but a chick, and she's white. And yes, rest in peace, Gary Coleman. Baby doll was, she had a condition that basically made her look like she was five for her whole life. And in the episode that we first see her in, she's like 30-something. Her whole backstory was she was a, in her 20s, she was an actor playing a little girl on a sitcom. She got upstaged by a new character who had brought in. The show was shortly thereafter canceled, and she's now seeking revenge on the cast. It was a pretty good episode, and I did really enjoy it. Her second episode, I believe, was called Life is a Croc. I forget the title of her first episode. In Life as a Croc, she was working at this hotel. A guy pissed her off at the front desk, and in her room, she's watching the trial of Killer Croc, who breaks free and runs away. He gets recaptured after he breaks free. She goes to prison and visits him and breaks him out, and they start a relationship. Later on in the episode, she finds out that she's been getting two times, and she attempts to kill them both by blowing up a nuclear power plant. Dumbass. Gonna destroy the whole frickin' city. But Batman and Batgirl show up to save the day. End of Baby Doll's story. We never saw her in the comics, to my knowledge, and I read quite a bit of Batman literature or the movies. And I think she'd be a pretty good villain for both the movies and the comics. Just tweak her slightly, ever so slightly. But, yeah, that's all I really have to say on Batman the Animated Series. It's a fantastic show, and if you're listening to this episode of Tooncast, go out and buy the DVDs right now. Go watch it. Do it. But, yes, thanks for listening to this message, and if you put it on the show, I thank you. Ooh, and until next time, this is the Vacuuminator saying, I'm Batman.
Hey, I'm calling in for the Batman Animated Series podcast for Tooncast. This is JT from Saskatoon calling. What can I say about this show that hasn't already been said? It is my number one favorite all-time animated series. It has got the definitive voice of Batman and Kevin Conroy. I really love this series. My only problem, the only problem I ever had with this series is when they went to the new Adventures of Batman in the last couple seasons, you know, the Red Sky series, where the art style just basically changed. It went from this really, well, not soft, but it had this, like, really animated look to it with the original stuff. Like, it was beautiful, the Bruce Timm style art. And then they went to, like, this very angular, monochrome, but it just, I didn't like the last couple of seasons, but that animation, notwithstanding, it is one of the best animated series of all time, in my opinion. So, anyway, I hope you guys enjoy this, and keep on geeking on. Okay? Bye.
Hey, guys. Raphael here of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did you say podcast? Dudes! Dudettes! You're listening to the podcast on the Geekcast Radio Network. Cowabunga!
This is Dr. Wily, and I will destroy Mega Man while listening to Tooncast!
This is Megatron, leader of the Predacons. And if you're hearing this, it means the Beast Unleashed podcast is now over. Yes. In the Beast Unleashed, myself, Steve Megatron Phillips, P. Pecan Court Michael Wilson, and TFG1 Mike review Beast Wars and Beast Machines in the very first podcast of its kind. Yes. In the podcast, we interview voice actors, writers from the show, and talk in-depth trivia between everything in between. So, if you're interested, you can tune in to the now-finished Beast Unleashed podcast over on GeekCastRadio.com. Excellent! Yes!
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.
Do you like retro shows? Did you grow up in either the 80s or the 90s? Then tune into Telecast, GeekCastRadio.com's newest podcast. Join us here on the Telecast as we revisit some of your favorite shows, such as Clarissa Explains It All, Salute Your Shorts, Saved by the Bell, and much, much more, only on GeekCastRadio.com.
Hello, nurses and friends of nurses. Yakko Warner here, and you're listening to a podcast on the GeekCast Radio Network. Lucky you.
Welcome to a collaboration between the GeekCast Radio Network and the Pop Culture Network. This is From the Command Center, the podcast. I am your host, TFG and Mike from the GCRN, and joining me is Zordon himself. Scotty Cash.
That's right, Scotty Cash from the Pop Culture Network, and today we're introducing you to the audio version of From the Command Center, the podcast that will entail our intake on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the episodes, the seasons, and all that other good stuff.
Now back to Tooncast!
So thank you to everyone who left us voicemails, and to anyone who said they were going to leave a voicemail but never did. You are not a fan of this podcast or this cartoon.
Slap in the face.
Slackers. Bunch of freaking slackers, that's all you people are. And if you're a person who has never actually watched the cartoon, that's fine. If you're a person who is too young to even remember the cartoon, well, why are you calling in? But thank you to everybody, seriously. Thank you to the six people that did leave voicemails. A couple of things I got to point out. Our super fan, Kevin Cooper, he says in his voicemail, the new hotness, talking about anime. And I'm sorry, the first thing that popped into my head was Agent J. Oh, God. That's hilarious. What else do we want to say about these voicemails before we give our final thoughts? Because I'm drowning here.
Definitely good feedback. I like a lot of what, like for instance, you know, Tara saying it was a really good show. Just everybody kind of nailed a little piece of it. The only thing I've got a little peeve with is the whole baby doll comment. I don't think that has any place in any movie because it's always going to be one of the core villains.
Yeah.
And always should be because that's what everybody knows, whereas Baby Doll was, what, two episodes?
Yeah.
And she was pretty useless.
I mean, if they wanted to make it like a mini B-plot of one of the movies or maybe give her some sort of, like, a running gag through one of the movies, like... We all know after The Dark Knight Rises, Christopher Nolan is done. So whoever picks up the mantle of Batman and goes on with the live-action films, if they want to bring in Baby Doll as kind of like a little cameo in the background, I wouldn't mind that. But having her as a main villain or as even as a secondary villain, it wouldn't work.
See, most of these characters have been done in a film. I would rather see the ventriloquist over Baby Doll in a film.
Yeah.
Bane's been featured twice. I mean, the new film's going to have him. I would rather see the Mad Hatter show up, Killer Croc, a better rendition of the Riddler and Mr. Freeze. Catwoman's already going to show up, a better rendition of the Penguin. I mean, just some of these characters could be done better than they've previously been done. Shit, I'd love to see the Clock King. I mean, just... I don't see potential in the Baby Doll area. I mean, freaking Rupert Thorne and like, Talia al Ghul and Hardak are, you know, more villainy than that. I mean, it's just, it's one of those kind of throwaway villain of the week type things.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not trying to bash the review, but this series, I mean, it's not a continuation of the comics. The comics are completely 100% different from the actual series. It has nothing to do with the comic line, which
right.
is why it's the animated series. And I've read the old comics. I had been an avid reader from the 600s on to 700s before I quit reading them, and then I just recently started picking it up again, reading them, due to Batman dying, coming back to life, and all that, and his Batman Incorporated type thing, where there's two Batman, and a Robin, a Batgirl. I mean, just all different aspects of the Bat family expanding through Bruce Wayne's funding, and this is nothing like the comic series.
No.
It draws from older plot lines from the main comic series of the, you know, pre-80s.
Yeah.
But it's still an entity all on its own, and the only way you can truly appreciate it is if you actually grew up with it. If you were, you know, like 2 years old or 5 years old when it came out, it's kind of hard to draw a good viewing of it.
Exactly.
Other than, I mean, I could see where you could, most people in that age range like Teen Titans, which has nothing to do with this at all. So, I mean, I'm not trying to bash it, that's just...
I forget who it was. I think it was Glade that said something about Young Justice and Bruce Timm. Dude, Bruce Timm has nothing to do with Young Justice. That's not his style. That's more in line with the DC animated original movies rather than the Bruce Timm style. However, Bruce Timm will be coming back with something in his own style with the new Green Lantern animated series coming, I think, later this year. But as far as my overall thoughts of Batman the Animated Series, it like I said before, if you're just ranking superhero cartoons, it should be number one. I don't care what anyone else says. It should be number one because it is that awesome. Voice acting, we kind of hit on it a little bit. We didn't really hit on it too much, but I mean, Kevin Conroy, for Christ's sake, he's the definitive voice for animated Batman. Doesn't matter what kind of style Batman is drawn in animation, Kevin Conroy is the definitive voice. And then Mark Hamill is the Joker, just an amazing, amazing voice talent, all around the entire cast.
Yes, and when you think of these characters, those are the voices that come to mind.
Exactly.
It's not these, you know, live-action ones. It's not these other series. It's this set of actors. You hear them when you hear this character's name.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. So I think that's going to do it for us, considering as how the ghost of Tooncast Past is bugging us in the Ustream chat. Maybe he needs some sort of California raisin, I don't know. Oh,
yeah,
boy.
It's some kind of telecast.
There's a California raisin. There's another date pun for you. thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. As always, get in contact with us. Leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Join the forums over at Predacon Empire and Geekcast Radio. Let's see what else. I'm probably going to have you edit this because I'm searching for the iTunes crap because I didn't have it pulled up at the time. And I know Kevin's sitting over there typing in the Ustream chat, you moron, you bastard, you dumbass. I know he's typing something even though I'm not looking at it. And yeah, you are to cut all this crap out, Steve. God, I'm drowning here. Let's see, most recent. Yes, you can leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Speaking of iTunes, we have new reviews. 6SYXX wrote us one on February 11th, 2011. Says, great job, gives us 5 stars. Thank you for that rating. I've listened to just about every episode of this podcast, and I have to say it's great. Keep up the good work. I must also commend you on adding Tara to your cast. She's great. Keep up the good work. And then we have another one from longtime fan Jason Jackson. He writes, excellent, gives us 5 stars. This was posted on February 15th, 2011. Thank you, Jason, for writing in. Love the show. First of all, you guys are great to listen to and each bring something different to the table, and guys do a good job on doing your homework and giving us as much info as possible. Keep doing the excellent work. So thank you for leaving the iTunes reviews. Please do so in the future. You can follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRNTuneCast. It's all one word. Mine is TFJ and Mike. What is your Twitter?
SCP21.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. You can call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and wish you'll join us next time when we'll be continuing the DCAU Spotlight with Superman the Animated Series, and Nightwing will be returning with me for that one. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Steve Megatron Phillips.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.